I'm Mary Harris. You are listening to WNYC. Last winter, more than 16 million viewers tuned in for the first season of Masterpiece's Victoria on PBS. It tells the story of a strong-willed, passionate young woman who, in 1837, at just the age of 18, ascended to the British throne. She married for love, and she went on to bear 9 children. The show's much-anticipated second season is beginning Sunday, January 14th, starring Jenna Coleman as Queen Victoria. Rufus Sewell plays Lord Melbourne, Victoria's first prime minister, with whom she falls in love. Daisy Goodwin created, wrote, and served as executive producer of this series, and I am so thrilled it has brought all of them to our show. Welcome.
Hi.
Thank you.
Congratulations on your second season.
Thank you.
So, Daisy, I'm going to start with you. Why did you want to tell the story of Queen Victoria in particular?
Well, I've had a lifelong relationship with Victoria that started when I was at university.
Okay, what does that mean?
I'm laughing because Daisy, just to let you know, Daisy's got a cold, so Daisy's voice is
we're
quite different.
A slightly croakier version of Daisy,
you're getting the husky, the femme fatale version of me. Okay. Normally I talk like this. No, so and I came across Victoria's diaries, and I was really entranced by them. And there was this one particular sentence where she's talking about going for a ride with Albert, and they've just come in from the rain, and there's Albert looking so handsome in his white cashmere breeches, nothing under them. And I thought, wow, that's a girl after my own heart. And then fast forward 35 years, I'm having a row with my teenage daughter, who is 17. She's 4'11". She's 5', just like Victoria, and she's giving me hell. And I just thought, God, what would it be like if, you know, she woke up tomorrow morning and she was Queen of England and the boss of me? What would that be like? And I thought that was quite a good starting point for a drama.
Okay, Jenna, let me go to you. Did you read the diaries to prepare for the role?
Yeah, I did. I mean, everybody can, which is which people don't seem to know. I mean, they are literally now like online. There's a website, and you can type in the date and go to, you know, whichever extract you want over throughout her life.
What was the moment that surprised you most?
Oh, there's so many. I think how accessible they are, and I didn't know.
Yeah.
And also how candid she is and how frank she is. Like, it does make you think if she was around today, like, you know, in terms of social media and things like that. I mean, she published a book. Mm. And, you know, the kind of, she didn't seem to mind so much about privacy, I guess. Yeah. She was just very open about her opinions, her thoughts. It's all there for you to read.
Well, yeah. What wasn't edited out by her daughter?
Yeah, which saddens me so much.
I know, the missing diary entries.
All of the racier bits were taken out.
So really, that's a toned down Victoria.
Mm. And it's still not toned down.
No,
read it.
You know, what, considering what's left, you can only imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard you also visited one of her thrones. It's tiny.
Yeah, it's so tiny. I mean, it's been great. We've had lots of access to, you know, behind the scene tours at Kensington Palace, and we've been to Buckingham Palace, Osborne House, and you really get a sense of her person. It's incredible. But when you see her dresses in particular, like, you see how she was absolutely tiny
to begin with.
Yes. Yes.
She got a little bigger.
She didn't
get
taller, but she got larger.
Yeah. She did. I mean, it's
she did get wider.
She did.
Yes.
But it is really amazing to see, you kind of really, especially at Osborne House, you really get a sense of her.
Yeah. Now, Rufus, you play the Queen's confidant, the Prime Minister, Lord Melbourne. Did he really step forward and mentor Queen Victoria?
Oh, absolutely. I think it was really formative for Victoria because she'd never been alone. She slept in the same bed with her mum. She had to be escorted down the stairs.
In the same bed?
Yeah. And she'd never really had any time alone until she was Queen, and she could suddenly banish them out of the room and have a bit of time on her own. It's very important, I think, in their relationship and in her development, that the first person, the first man that she ever spent time alone with didn't want anything from her. Hmm. It was actually the first person she'd ever had contact with who didn't seek in some way to manipulate her towards their own, maybe what they wanted for her or what they wanted for herself. And he genuinely had nothing that he wanted to gain. He was born with a position. He'd gone as far as he could politically. He was rich. He didn't care. He was kind of over it all. And it gave him a new lease of life. But what their real connection was, the fact it was a genuine connection based on no need on his part. And he was able to just give her very true advice based on what he felt she needed.
And that was surprising because her family was sort of a little...
The opposite, yeah. Absolutely opposite. And Sir John Conroy, who was... She'd never really known a father. The only father figure she'd known was Sir John Conroy, who was effectively her mum's...
Not a father figure, no. Victoria.
No, what, her mum's boyfriend, basically, who really, really was incredibly controlling. And it was not a good relationship.
No.
Jenna, I wonder, were you surprised by how modern she seemed when you begin to look into the history a little bit more deeply to prepare for the role?
I was surprised by how much is still relevant today, like the kind of, and the conversations that we're still having today and what she was navigating. And I mean, and what I find really fascinating is that she was the first queen who was a mother. And we're not actually talking that long ago, really.
First queen regnant, the first queen in her own right to marry and have children while on the throne, which...
And she had nine of them.
Nine of them, babies. which I think made a huge difference to the way women were perceived in the 19th century, because suddenly it put paid to all the myths that women were somehow lesser because they were having children, that they couldn't cope with the stresses of life, that they couldn't hold positions of responsibility, because there she was doing it, reigning and having nine children.
And also the first royal family.
Yes.
The first image of the royal family came from Victoria and Albert, and pushing the, you know, the family portrait and into the fore, I guess.
So didn't she even think about remaining single for a while?
Yeah, I think she wasn't that keen to get married right away because, you know, she was having rather a good time when she came to the throne. She was 18, she was a teenager, she was having balls, parties, she was hanging out with Lord M, who was, you know, delightful company.
They used to get drunk together, which is so fantastic.
Is that in the diary too?
Gossiping about people in the Privy Council.
Yeah, exactly. They had a whale of a time.
So, Rufus, how familiar were you with Queen Victoria before this part?
I was familiar with the image, I suppose, that everyone else is, the kind of dour, sour-faced, rotund,
You're staring at me as you're saying this.
That image, that incredibly kind of buttoned up. I mean, I'd heard rumours that, and obviously, you know, we'd heard a little bit about John Brown, et cetera, but it's been really interesting to read and to discover through this series just how different she was, not only when she was younger, but even when she was older, how different she was, the PR job that was done. I mean, literally done by Beatrice particularly.
By her family, yes.
About trying to kind of order her image after her death into something that was more in keeping with what the public wanted to see.
What's something that changed that surprised
you? Well, she was very sexual, she was very driven, she was very passionate, she was very, you know, opinionated.
Sense of humour in such a way.
And she was none of the things that we think of. I mean, I think people have sort of, she's frozen in time as this woman in black who scowls with a sort of poodle on her head. But actually, if you look at her from the beginning of her life, you see that actually she's still the same woman who was the teenager who came to the throne, who was impulsive and, you know, wanted fun and parties and laughter. And she was still that woman at the end of her life. But, you know, she'd kind of... Unfortunately, photography didn't do her any favours.
So, right, because photography was invented while she was...
Of course it was.
Daisy told me something really interesting about was it, you told me about the neck brace, and it took 10 minutes to take a photograph.
So when, you know, well, some of the very famous pictures of Victoria and Albert, which are taken at the end of the 1840s, because the exposure time was so long for these early photographs, they had to stand in neck braces to keep them perfectly still, because the exposure
time...
It's
like getting an
MRI. Yeah, the exposure time was like 10 minutes, and otherwise, if they moved, it would be blurry. So, you know, the reason they're all sort of looking so... like
you get an MRI expression.
Like halibuts.
True. I mean, I can't sustain a smile for longer than a third of a second in a photograph.
We've noticed. Right?
I'm sorry.
I am Mary Harris. You are listening to WNYC. I am here with Jenna Coleman and Rufus Sewell and Daisy Goodwin, and we are talking about Victoria, which is starting up again in January on Masterpiece for PBS. Jenna, I guess I want to go back to you and talk a little bit about what it's like to transform into this character, both through the costumes and the hair and everything else. What is it like?
You mean literally getting ready on set for the day? I guess it is a transformation, because we have, you know, I get, you know, an entire head full of somebody else's hair put on my head.
The lenses
is like the last thing to go in, which turned
contact lenses,
my eyes blue, And I have to say that was our makeup designer's idea, because she just said all of the portraits, it's her eyes that pierce out to you, her blue eyes, and obviously I have naturally dark eyes. So it's amazing what it does to your face, actually, to change. And you have the costumes and the corsets. It's
how many layers are there in those corsets?
There are a lot of layers, because the underskirts are like duvets. So you're kind of like walking around with a big feather duvet on.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Oof. So you were 29 when you were cast to play an 18-year-old. And so I wonder what it was like to get back into that young mindset.
I guess to begin with Victoria, I was it's grappling with, you know, in so many ways, she was so wise and had a sense of herself. Yet this is a girl who has, as we're saying, never been in a room with a man on her own before, and isn't educated in maybe all of the ways that, especially not, you know, socially or worldly educated, and has that experience. So the naivety was really true, yet she was somebody who was incredibly fierce as well. So you're kind of, I guess, you know, youth and power, and you're grappling with Victoria always, I find, between so many opposing things. And that's the hardest thing, I think, to try and get a handle on her, because she is very inconsistent and very contradictory.
She's a teenager.
Yeah, I mean, as a teenager in particular, but obviously it was trying to find the starting point, knowing we start at such a place for her to grow. And obviously that's what we want to keep on doing, is how do we age and how does she keep on growing, becoming, you know, into the Victoria, the Judi Dench Victoria, I suppose, that we know.
She never loses her curiosity for life, which is, I think, the thing that I find so charming about Victoria. She never kind of goes, seen it all, done that, been there. She's always fascinated by people. And people would say that when they went to see Victoria, she was always really interested in their illnesses, and she loved the account of sort of a really good funeral. And, you know, she loved a good funeral.
Illnesses so she, and funerals.
She wasn't. She wasn't somebody who's just, you know, world weary at all. She was always sort of gripped by what was going on about her. And, you know, I'm afraid she was a bit of a micromanager with her children, but she wasn't an indifferent mother. She was a very hands-on mother in that sense.
And she wrote to the Elephant Man every year. I love that.
Did she?
Really?
I didn't know that. Wrote to John
Merrick.
What
did she say?
I don't know. I think, you know, just checking in. Yeah. How are you?
They weren't abusive letters, though.
No. But it was, and someone else told me about Jack the Ripper as well, she would send letters.
She tried to, in the 1880s, when Jack the Ripper was at those crimes were at their height, she was very, very determined that he should be caught, and she kept writing to the Home Secretary and saying,
oh, not writing to Jack the Ripper.
Have you been through the seamen's hostels and checked for bloodstained clothing, you know, just in case?
Yes, micromanaging.
Thank you very much, Your Majesty.
Season one ends with Victoria giving birth to her first child, a girl named Victoria. how many years does the first season cover?
It's about 3 years.
So I just wonder how motherhood sort of changed her on the throne, or whether it did at all.
I think it did inevitably, because it really kept her out of sort of sight for quite a long time, because she had, I think, 6 children in 7 or 8 years, so she was constantly pregnant. And when she was pregnant, Albert would step in and kind of do the boxes and kind of be the most effective maternity cover you could ever have. And she found that quite tricky, because, of course, you know, she could trust him, but on the other hand, he was rather too good at her job. So there's always going to be a bit of a conflict there. And I think as time went on, she became more reconciled to that. But it wasn't always the easiest situation, and I think that's what we explore in series two.
Yeah, and it's so familiar, I feel like, to so many people today who are trying to juggle everything. But I was really struck by the end of season one. There's this scene where a crowd of men is gathered outside Victoria's door as she is in labor.
Well, you know, she was the first queen to give birth without the Home Secretary and the Prime Minister and the Archbishop of Canterbury actually in the room, because prior to that, all these people had to be there to certify that the baby that was born was actually the real baby and not some kind of foundling that had been brought in from elsewhere.
And she
said, I'm not having that, and made Albert send them all out.
Albert was also present, which was unusual.
at the time.
He was there for all nine births. Yeah.
For all nine births?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I guess I want to end here because I feel like all of us Americans are obsessed with royalty. You know, obviously, we're all watching for the new royal wedding. What do you think we get right and wrong when we try to understand it from over here, across the pond?
I think possibly you might think that we are, that the British revere our monarchy more than we actually do.
Yeah, or as much as you do, in fact.
Tell me about that.
Well, I think that there is a sense. I mean, I think it's lovely to look at the royal family from outside, but if you're British, there are times when you think, well, you know, I love having this wonderful sort of continuing soap opera, you know, at the centre of public life, but there are moments when I just think, oh, you know, it's really ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I have those moments, and then I think, yeah, but you know, it's paying the rent, so you should just, you know, suppress those thoughts right now. Yeah.
It's good television.
It is very good television. But there are moments when, you know, I'm walking across London and you see kind of carriages and people with kind of girl braid on their uniforms and you think, really? You know, this is 21st century London. I mean, I love the pageantry, but I also feel slightly embarrassed by it.
I am Mary Harris. I have been speaking with Jenna Coleman, Rufus Sewell, and Daisy Goodwin about the new PBS series, Victoria. Thank you all so much for being here. Stay tuned. January is coming out on PBS. Coming up, Al and Larry Ubell, our gurus of how-to, return just in time to talk about winter home repairs and projects. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. We are also available as a podcast.